Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest running podcast, now in our 16th year. In a special edition of the podcast this week, we sit down with Roger Snow, a legend in the table game business and now Senior Vice President at Scientific Games, on how tables have been impacted by COVID and why he believes a table game renaissance will soon be underway. The GGB Podcast is brought to you by Vector Solutions, formerly Casino Essentials, the leading e-learning provider of AML compliance training for the gaming industry. For more information, visit CasinoEssentials.com. Table games were once the staple of the casino business, which brought in the bulk of the gaming revenue. Slot machines were something you offered for the wives of the high rollers. Obviously, that dynamic has shifted, and Roger Snow has followed it throughout his career. A senior vice president at Scientific Games, Snow has developed and encouraged new table game development in many capacities. He understands the operations and players, and his opinions on the sector carry much weight. He spoke with me at the Scientific Games offices in Las Vegas in February. Roger Snow, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. It's good to sit down with you here in the empty offices of Scientific Games in Las Vegas.
It's good to sit down anywhere with somebody else.
Yeah, exactly, right.
I think we're exactly 6 feet apart, so we're good.
Yes, we're fine. So, you know, I just wanted to touch base with you. I know you're not really in charge of table games anymore for Scientific Games, but you have such a history in the industry. You're one of the legends in the industry when it comes to table games, and I just wanted to talk about what's going on in the industry here. You know, what are some of the things that are happening, and where you think it's going? So,
well, we can take that in a lot of different directions.
Sure, right.
It's funny. I remember I wrote a column in your magazine right when the pandemic started, and I made a bunch of predictions, most of which came true. But I tell you what, I was wrong about one thing. Mm-hmm. I never thought, if you go to a casino now, you see all these plexiglass partitions on poker, blackjack, mm-hmm. everything, roulette. I never thought that players would tolerate that.
Right.
I thought there would be an uprising. And I tell you what, they've adapted to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly literally a layer of protection for them. So in this business that we're in, you're always making predictions.
Right.
Sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong.
Right.
And that was one, boy, I really missed the boat on that one.
Well, you know, I want to talk about it a little later in the conversation here. But yeah, I think it's pretty amazing that they do get around the crap table with those
incredible
partitions. You know?
It's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, how do you roll the dice even? You know? It's tough. So, but let's start with blackjack. My friend John Mahaffey came out with a study recently, his annual study on Vegas blackjack. It showed like kind of a disturbing trend continuing toward more 6-5 games and rules that really don't favor the player. You know, obviously that makes more money for the operators, but does it make the game less enjoyable for the customers?
Well, for those that know the odds, I'm sure it does, and they probably avoid the games altogether.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But you know, this trend has been going on. Geez, I'm trying to think. I moved here in 1997, and back then, you hear strip rules, downtown rules,
right.
And strip rules typically was, one of them was the dealer would stand on soft 17,
right.
Which is, you know, advantageous for the player.
Sure.
And that's gone, except at the highest of high limit tables.
Right.
They don't do that anymore. And it's simple economics.
Mm-hmm.
This is the casino business.
Sure.
I mean, it's not casino friends, it's
right.
casino
yeah.
business. And these games are certainly not, you know, players play it so close to perfect strategy.
Right.
And it's hard for the casino to really offer the games. They're not going to offer them at a loss. Labor rate goes up constantly.
Sure, right.
So it doesn't surprise me, and that's just the way it goes. What does surprise me is a lot of players seem to like it.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the party pits.
Right.
They have the dealers with all their bling on and everything. It's a fun environment. And players are certainly willing to overlook the fact they're playing at a much higher advantage
right.
for the experience and the low limits.
Yeah.
You can play, I've even seen dollar blackjack recently. $5 blackjack, $5
mm-hmm.
blackjack. You can't play that with old-fashioned strip rules and
right.
0.2, 0.3%
right. yeah.
house advantage. Forget about it.
Yeah.
So I just think the mentality of most players has changed. and they're here really more for fun
right.
than for combat mm-hmm. with the casino.
Yeah, no question about that. Is this limited to Vegas, or is this all around the industry in all jurisdictions?
I think it's everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there are some markets where you can, like Barona, famously. Barona is right. known for having favorable rules on, mm-hmm. on anything. Right. So I'm sure there are a few exceptions around the country, but I would say overall it is a nationwide trend.
Yeah. I was surprised last summer when I was in Atlantic City, I went to the Wild Wild West, which is now part of mm-hmm. Caesars, and they had gone from 6-5 to 3-2, you know, on a lower limit game. So it was kind of reversing that trend. But I'm wondering, like, if a casino did that, would they attract more players and you know, higher limits, that kind of thing?
I'm sure they would.
Yeah.
Now there's a trade-off. I'm curious. You said you saw this.
Yeah.
What were the limits on the game?
It was a $10 game.
$10. Yeah. Oh, that's a good game.
Right. Right.
You should have played.
I was surprised. I did. I still lost.
But yeah. So I think a lot of times, and it's like classic marketing. If everyone's zigging, you zag.
Right.
So I think back in the day, back sure. in our day, because you and I are old,
right.
Like Bob Stupak came mm-hmm. here back in the Vegas World days, and we had all kinds of crazy games, like double exposure blackjack. Deal to the bottom, right. single deck, all like crazy 100 times odds.
Right, yep.
So, and then everybody kind of followed suit, and then it pivots, it swings back. So I think somebody, if you were trying to gain an edge in the marketplace, I think this would be a great opportunity to do it. And maybe it's only on a promotional basis.
Right, right.
Like sometimes the sportsbooks will have lower than 11 to 10 odds on mm-hmm. on a bet just for promotional reasons. I can see that. I can see it coming back, at least in that.
Well, they're doing that at the Cromwell on the Strip here. They have favorable rules. They have mostly 3-2 blackjack and 10, you know, 100 times odds on craps and things like that. So I agree. I think you can really set yourself apart by having these favorable
rules. Yeah, and casino operators are smart. They'll find these opportunities in the marketplace right. and they'll exploit them.
So we just ran the first column by Bill Zender. He's writing for us now, and he wrote a piece about blackjack side bets,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't realize how difficult they were to evaluate. But he only used one side bet. I forget which one it was, but it was just like very complicated.
Well, my subscription was late, so I haven't read it. I haven't read it this month. I only have it in front of me right now. So right. His thesis is that they're good.
You know, you can get a theoretical win on them, and he went, you know, ran the numbers and things like that. But
from a player's perspective,
no, from the operators.
That's why they take
the operators,
them.
Of course.
Oh. That's dog bites man. I was hoping for some inside info. Hey, here's a right. side bet you can beat.
Yeah, no, he didn't have that. And obviously, you can't beat hardly any of these.
Well, some of them, it's funny, some of them you can.
Yeah.
And there's smart guys out mm-hmm. there that jump on these things. And a lot of times, if you have a blackjack game, mm-hmm. blackjack's the most obvious because the cards come out. It's card counting, but
right.
there was a side bet once years ago. I think it was got a great name, Sweet 16. And it was based on, I think, you getting a hard 16 in your first mm-hmm. two cards. But obviously, that's certainly easier with a preponderance of sixes in the
right,
deck
sure.
because there are more tens than anything else. So there are side bets that have been beaten. But
and I know you can beat them when the progressive jackpot
goes up
to a certain level.
Correct.
Then it's all on your favor. But
correct.
But that takes a while. And again, it takes a lot of math to figure that
yeah,
out.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, this kind of dovetails in the first part of the conversation about blackjack. The days of, it's getting tougher and tougher to be an advantage player. In this
right.
age today, there are fewer weak spots
mm-hmm.
on the floor to go after. So these games are all calibrated to give the house, you know, a house advantage, of course.
Right.
But there's not as much variance in that. So blackjack, a blackjack game, for example, with a 0.2% house advantage, and you can count into it. Is much more dangerous than a 6-5 blackjack
sure.
game, which I don't even know, 2.5%.
Yeah.
Elliot Frome would be kicking me
right.
if he were here. He knows the numbers
right.
exactly. It's hard to beat that because
right.
you have to overcome a much larger edge.
Mm-hmm.
So what else did Bill have to say?
Well, you know, this is only part one. The next one will be out next month. But we're talking about side bets, and he's going to go through a whole progression of things. He's such a smart guy.
Oh, no, he's great. It's funny because side bets and progressives and all these things now on table games, it's, you know, if you go back 10, 15 years ago, you hardly ever saw
right.
a game without a progressive,
mm-hmm.
and side bets not so much. Now it's the complete opposite. If
right.
you see a game without a side bet, it's like, oh, that's weird.
Right.
And because casino, because players like them.
Sure, they do.
And yep. everybody, everyone, the Eagles, everyone likes to take a little chance and have it come out right.
right.
Everyone likes to bet $5 to win $50.
Right.
That's yep. great. And side bets allow you to have that. And there's volatility, and it's they add a great deal of excitement to a blackjack or baccarat or anything
sure.
you can think of.
Other than insurance, what was the first blackjack side bet? I mean,
oh God, I'll tell you the first side bet that I ever saw, and it was invented by Ken Perry.
Right,
you know,
Super
Ken?
Sevens. Yeah, I know
yeah okay,
Super.
Right. I had Foxwoods right. Casino, and yeah. I'm like, hey, this what is this?
Right.
And I got that classic. They call it FOMO now, fear of missing out. It's like I got it one time and didn't make the bet.
Right.
And I got two sevens or two sevens of the same suit or the same color. I missed out, and I never missed out again. Of course, that Ken, I'm gonna get you, Ken. If you're out there, you cost me a fortune. So that's the first one that I saw, and then you know Royal Match when I moved to Vegas. God, there's 21+3. Of course,
right,
Derek's old side bet. Bet the Set, Perfect Pairs, mm-hmm. which is mostly in Australia. There's so many of them now.
Sure. Yeah. There's a million of them. So, you know, baccarat has got a lot of side bets as well. There's a lot of different types of bets on there. Has that become as popular nowadays or more popular than it was in the past?
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, baccarat, obviously very traditional game,
right.
played primarily, but not exclusively, but primarily by Asians.
Right.
And people are hesitant to mess with the game.
Right.
Leave it alone. It does so well.
Sure.
But baccarat's house advantage on, again, I wish Elliot were here, player and banker is probably an average of
1.14.
Okay.
Like that, yeah.
And then you throw the tie bet in, but
right.
people don't really bet the tie very often.
Yeah.
So you've got a game that probably has a blended house advantage of about 1.2, 1.18%,
mm-hmm.
which isn't great.
Right.
Now, if someone's betting $500,000, okay,
sure,
that's pretty,
right,
your expected win is pretty high. So you have things like, which is my Dragon Bonus,
mm-hmm.
which is, I think, my first and only foray into the baccarat world for side bets. You've got the Dragon 7 and the Panda 8 from
right.
the Easy Baccarat guys. Those are very popular. There are a few others out there. I've seen a couple. I think it's named Wayne Hung. He had a kind of a cool side bet. I think it was at Gold Coast.
Mm-hmm.
It was a tie bet, but it had a graduated pay scale.
I see.
Instead of paying like a flat 11-1, if
right.
you tied, it was like, I think it was a colored tie or a paired. There was ties with different elements of it, and it had a pretty high top payout. I thought that was pretty neat. We've got a baccarat. There are some baccarat progressives out there. We've got one based on the 9.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, you know, Dragon 7,
right.
Panda 8, well, Heavenly 9.
Yeah.
And it's the same kind of a concept, but
right.
we drive a progressive on that. But yeah, baccarat. You know, there are 14,000 baccarat tables in
yeah.
the world. And I think half of them are at the Sands in Macau.
Yeah.
So that's a joke. But
no,
it seems like it when you go there.
I do. It's just
everywhere.
Games, yeah.
It's incredible. You got 14,000 baccarat games. I think 10 or 11,000 of them are in Asia. And there's still massive opportunity for companies like ours
mm-hmm.
and our competitors
sure.
to, or people out there listening to this that have an idea to put something on baccarat, because I don't know what the numbers are now, but baccarat's hold, not its mathematical advantage, but its hold win divided into drop, is probably still around 16-17%. But what if you could raise that a basis point?
Right.
Which money that is?
Yeah.
Trillions of dollars are bet on baccarat every year. So you could, boy, if there's a great opportunity for somebody in this business to...
Sure, if they have a great idea.
But as always, easier, like most things in life, it's easier said than done.
Right.
For every successful baccarat side bet or derivative, the graveyard is probably, there's probably 100 dead bodies out there.
Well, speaking of graveyards,
speaking of dead bodies,
the market for new table games is so rough. I mean, over the years, I mean, you've seen it. I have people calling me up. I've got this great idea for a game, and they start explaining it, and you know, if it takes longer than 10 seconds, I say, no, it's not going to work.
Yeah, it's like, I make the joke, it's like rock and roll band names. All the good names are taken.
Right.
Now you got to come up, or street names.
Yeah, right.
Like,
yeah.
I'm buying a new house. I don't even want to look at my street. It's so complicated. Whatever happened to, you know, Chestnut Road or
right,
Mill
yeah,
Street,
right.
everything is so complicated. But in table games, there was this great, like a gold rush.
Right.
In the mid-2000s. I mean, it really, you got to give a lot of credit to John Breeding, the founder of Shuffle Master and
yep.
the creator of Let It Ride.
Mm-hmm.
Derek Webb, creator of Three Card Poker and 21 Plus 3. And then people like me and others saw dollar signs, sure, saw opportunity, and you come in with easy baccarat, Spanish 21, four card poker, Ultimate Texas Hold'em, Texas Hold'em bonus, all the high card flush, all these games. There was this mad rush to put the games in, and most of the really good ideas have been taken.
Right.
And the market, and this is not just my opinion, the market will tell you, I believe in the market explicitly, the market isn't accepting a lot of new games. Like the most successful brand new game, progressive, in the last 10 years is High Card Flush,
right,
which has a couple of hundred installs. But that's not, you know, in its heyday, Caribbean said had a couple of thousand. Three Card Poker, 1,600. Right. Ultimate Texas Hold'em, 1,500. The era of those big monster games is over. So, but there's so much content, and it's hard. I get people all the time.
Of course, right.
Just like you. Yep. They've got an idea. It's tough. First of all, the intellectual property is much more difficult now than it was then. So you have a good game, and then some guy just rips it off, changes the name, and charges 10 cents on the dollar. It's rough. I forgot. I got to mention Free Bet Blackjack, Jeff Hall. I got a lot of people who kill me. Jeff Hall put a fatwa out on me if I don't mention his name. So Jeff Hall was one of the greatest of all time. Blackjack Switch, Free Bet Blackjack, Power Blackjack, etc. It's rough. So now, luckily, and it's because we're so close to it, not that we're that smart, but we're able to see kind of around the corners. So I saw this coming in the late 2000s.
Right.
Which is why we pivoted towards progressives.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just us now. It's AGS, it's Galaxy, those guys, Aces Up out of Colorado. Mm-hmm. Everyone's now on the progressive bandwagon. But we were the pioneers. We were out there. We could have looked awfully stupid if this had failed. We bought the rights from PGIC. I forgot they changed their name. We bought those rights back in 2008, 2009. And we were lucky. We took a chance and it worked out. So we were ahead of the curve. And now, if you look at the growth of proprietary table games as a segment, most of it, Roger, in the last 10 years has been fueled by progressives.
Right.
They're on every one of our carnival games. I still use that term.
Right.
Carnival games I would say half of our carnival games have progressives on them. Blackjack, Ryan Yee, one of the guys that used to work for me here. Well, we both still work here. He doesn't work for me anymore. but he did Blazing Sevens Blackjack, which is very successful. Ron LaDuca was Super 4 Blackjack.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're seeing the progressives get outside of the carnival pit, getting on Blackjack, getting on Baccarat, and someday soon they'll be on craps and roulette. We're leaving those for last because they're the most difficult.
Sure, right. Well, you know, those games are all side bets pretty much.
I know,
right?
but we actually there are, you know, they've got the we've got Sharpshooter and we've got what's the other one from, I think it's Galaxy has the All Tall All Small they bought from Lyle Berman's company. there's plenty of there's actually we ended up buying Perry Stassi's black crap side bet years ago. And I remember thinking, the last thing craps needs is another side bet.
Right, yeah.
We wrote him a check with a couple of commas in it, and I guess we needed it because he really proved there was a market for that game.
Yeah, and then, you know, when you look at roulette, I mean, they've got the scoreboard there, and it's all like, you know, progressive jackpot.
Yeah, well, I tell you, there's a company out there not in our space. You know Todd Helsalter?
Mm-hmm.
You must know Todd. Sure. So he's over at that company, Evolution Gaming.
And which is an amazing company.
Amazing company. Yeah. And they've done some remarkable work over there. So they've got that game, Lightning Roulette. And I tell every land-based operator, go online and Google search Lightning Roulette. And I think this is the future of table games. And what they did was pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
They took the regular payout on a roulette, straight-up bet, from 35-1 down to, I think, 30-1. And that generates a massive amount of house advantage.
Right.
And they give it back. So before the start of every round, after all the bets are locked out, two, three, four numbers come up, and maybe it's worth 50-1 if it hits.
Right.
Maybe the 13's worth 100-1. Maybe the 36 is worth 1,000-1.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this random element. In the end, it's probably close to the house advantage of a regular double zero roulette game, but the volatility, even if you bet on 27, even if you, when those numbers come up and 27 is one of the hot numbers and it pays 200-1, in your mind, I've already won.
Right.
I'm now playing, I'm in an overlay. I have a huge advantage over the house right now, and it creates this tremendous excitement, and they've just taken that formula, which a lot of what we do is.
Right.
They've taken that formula, they're adding it to other games, and there's great, they have almost like a game show, mm-hmm. and your folks, if they Absolutely, Google this,
yeah.
it's like a game show.
Yeah, it is.
And everybody wants to be a contestant on a game show, and that's what they've turned it into. I see a future where you could have those types of games in a casino, mm-hmm. here on the Strip or in Atlantic sure. City or anywhere.
It's like a show.
Like a show.
Yeah.
I saw one of the coolest things a few years ago at Casino Loch Leamy, I'm probably butchering that pronunciation, in Ottawa, Canada, and they had like an e-table lounge with, they weren't deal. I mean, I guess they were dealers, but they were really like DJs and mm-hmm. they had music and there was, I think there was a dry ice machine. And that place was so much fun.
Yeah.
And the crowd, it's that group everyone salivates
right,
over.
Yeah.
It's 25 to 35 mm-hmm. year olds. They weren't betting big,
yeah.
e-tables. But I do see, when I look at the future of gaming, and I'm not the best at making predictions, especially about the future, Yogi Berra line.
Right.
But I do see that creeping in to make it more fun than just putting money down on a number and hoping it comes up.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it's almost an exaggerated party pit, you know.
Exactly what
yeah,
it is, yeah. exactly.
Yeah. So let's talk about electronic table games. You know, how much are they eating in? Are they eating into table game play, or are they actually developing new players that will move on to the live tables?
I'll give you an opinion. I don't have yeah. a fact. So in lieu of facts, I always give opinions.
Right.
So I think that they are, it probably erodes the play somewhat, albeit at the lower limits.
Right.
I think that's what you're not going to remove. I'm taking out my high limit baccarat salon
sure.
to put in a automated roulette wheel. That's not happening. But you are chipping away at the lower limit table game mm-hmm. base. But e-tables, and it's funny. Talk about, I'll never live this down. I never ever. This is about 20 years ago. Never thought e-tables would have any kind of a dent, mm-hmm. make any kind of a dent in this
right.
market. And boy, was I wrong. And you've got. You know, we're out there, you've got a Ruse, you've got Interblock, you've
sure.
got some great companies,
mm-hmm.
and the products get better looking.
Yeah,
our
yeah.
new stuff is fantastic.
Yeah.
The mm-hmm. Interblock stuff is gorgeous. I mean, yeah. there's some great stuff out there
in the
Ruse,
market. Like,
oh, that's
right,
yeah.
right in your face. You
yeah,
know,
and
great.
Again, I know
yeah.
that it's not, you know, beauty isn't everything,
right.
but these are very, the first generation of e-tables, and it's no knock, it's like the first generation of anything,
sure.
was very utilitarian looking.
Mm-hmm.
Something that came out of the Soviet Union in
right.
the 60s. I mean, it just didn't look. It was
well,
like,
they were all Eastern European countries.
Actually, that's
so.
Fair enough. They're all from, right. half of them are from Slovenia.
Right.
But they worked, but they weren't elegant. And then I'll have to give Interblock credit. They had some beautiful
yeah.
cabinet designs.
Yeah.
And then I think we've let past them, but you know, I'm biased,
right.
obviously.
Sure.
But we have our new cabinetry and the signage. We got this install one of them's up in British Columbia. Up in Vancouver, it's a whole video wall with e-tables. And it, again, it's that energy. I just think there's something about, I know it's hard to do now, there's something about a bunch of people together rooting for the same
sure,
outcome.
Right, right.
It's, there's nothing like it. And these e-tables, and what's happened is, it's these stadium setups.
Right.
So the old kind of e-tables were purely video.
Mm-hmm.
We call them Table Master. Now
right.
we still have those out there. But what's taken off for us and for the industry are what we call stadium
mm-hmm.
games. So it's you're a live dealer.
Right.
You've got a baccarat table in front of you or a roulette wheel in front of you, and you're still a live apparatus.
Right.
I'm just betting remotely and electronically. And I think because table games players trust that. Same with Evolution.
Sure.
I mentioned them a minute ago.
Right.
They don't have cartoon dealers and cartoon.
Right. Sure.
Everything is
studios
real.
And yeah.
And I think that makes a lot of sense to me, because table games players, they're just different than
right.
slot players.
Sure.
They trust more so in an outcome based on cards or mm. dice or a roulette ball versus a random number generator.
Right, right, right. And of course, you know, when you talk about the lower limits in Macau, when they put these stadiums in, you know, I think a regular table was $100 Hong Kong for a minimum.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And you can go down to 20 Hong Kong dollars there. You know,
and so. Again, sometimes e-tables, every once in a while, you're lucky in business. You have a tailwind.
Right.
So if you're in the e-table business in Macau, you've got a nice little tailwind behind you because of the cap on the number
right.
of gaming
mm-hmm.
positions. So that has really really benefited. And there was a once upon a time in Pennsylvania, you couldn't have live table games.
Right.
So if you were in the E, which we were in the E, still are in the e-table business, you benefited from that. And sometimes there are tax benefits, an e-table versus a slot machine. So, but you're also, speaking of tailwinds, coming out of COVID, there was no bigger tailwind than the one behind e-tables.
Right.
Because they can, you can certainly administer social distancing easier when you can just simply separate, physically separate the terminals from each other.
Right.
So e-tables have had a, they didn't, second wind's the wrong metaphor, but they really have accelerated coming out of COVID. And I think people try something for the first time. And the e-table experience now is great. If you've played one, ours or one of our competitors, nice big bright screen, it's comfortable. You don't have some guy like, you know, crowding up into you. It's a great, and you get the same betting. You never have to worry about a dealer mistake.
Right.
And it's a great experience.
Yeah, no question about that.
The GGB podcast is sponsored this week by Vector Solutions, formerly Casino Essentials, the leading e-learning provider of AML compliance training for the gaming industry. Find out how your casino can enhance your personnel's performance, ensure compliance, and protect resources. For more information, visit CasinoEssentials.com.
So talk about the impact of the pandemic on table games. You talked about the partitions, the plexiglass partitions, but now, you know, they've limited the number of players at each game to a really small number. And how has that impacted the business model of table games?
Well, again, you'd be better to speak to an operator about this. I will just give you my impressions. And I still walk through casinos a lot, and I check, look at things all the time. I was in California last week or the week before, and I was here on the Strip a couple of days ago. And one of the things that you're seeing is that I've seen a lot of higher limits than I would have expected.
Right.
And there's something else too, and it goes back to Jim Kilby, who had an influence on me in my career. He was a mathematician, and he's
professor
at UNLV, and he talked about the optimal occupancy level for a table game. And he said it's not six, it's not seven, it's more like 3.5.
Okay.
I don't know where you find a half a person, but okay, I'll give Jim's a smart guy.
Right.
So now you're seeing these tables run, and in some cases we've heard they're making more money than they were before per table, because with three people, maybe you're on, let's say we're playing Ultimate Texas Hold'em.
Yeah.
Just randomly pick a game.
Right. Happened to be one of yours.
Yeah. You're getting maybe 50 hands an hour out now. Well, that's a lot better than having six players at the table and getting, you know, half as many hands out an hour or whatever it is. So you're getting through people, your people are getting more action. I think players like it. I don't like being on a full table. There's always one guy who's trying to get the attention of the cocktail waitress. Right. And it's like, hey, can you just, you know, dude, you got 18. Just wave your hand over your card so we can get on with our lives here. So I believe more than anything that people, industries, they're adaptable.
Yeah.
They adapt. One thing that's happened, which is interesting, I think, maybe you won't think it's interesting, but it's most of our carnival games are dealt face down. But the concern was, well, if I dealt it face up on a full table, maybe the players could get an advantage, which is true in some games. But most of our games now, because casinos don't want players touching the cards, they're dealt face up. That also speeds the game up. So that's been one of those things that they were kind of forced into doing because they were afraid of transmission, and it has benefited them. Nobody likes the pandemic. No one's saying, hey, I'm all for it. But what does happen in these situations, things change. It's like warfare as well. Things change, and sometimes the changes end up being permanent. So I wouldn't be surprised. I don't expect casinos to have 3-spot tables going forward, but maybe 5-spot tables.
Sure.
And maybe dealing the games face up. There's no vulnerability.
No.
So why not do it?
Right.
And there are a couple of games that you could, if you knew what you were doing, if they were dealt face up, you could beat them. But then deal 5 spots.
Right.
Problem solved.
But if you get the if players can't touch the cards, you take that risk out.
That
you know,
goes completely. You know, yeah. And I don't know. People like Bill Zender would know more than I would about people that do that to the cards.
Right.
And I don't know how big that problem really is. But even if it's a small problem, it goes from small to zero immediately.
Yeah.
So when change is forced upon people, either individually or in aggregate, some of those changes remain permanent. Mm-hmm. Some will revert back to what they were. I think e-tables, this is the biggest beneficiary of this pandemic, and if you can isolate it, I'm not trying to be callous, by the way.
Right.
There are times where I will try to be callous. This is not one of them.
Right.
But I'm saying that if you just isolated it, e-tables have really been given the spotlight, and I think going forward that they're going to continue to grow rapidly.
Mm-hmm. And I've talked to some dealers who really kind of prefer the plexiglass, and especially in jurisdictions where they used to allow smoking and now they don't, you know. And it's, sometimes it's temporary, but they like the fact they don't have to breathe in the smoke anymore.
Listen, you know? You're exactly right. Imagine being a dealer. You've got an 8-hour shift. You're dealing for whatever it is, 6 hours or so. You've got, I don't know, a couple of dozen players coming through. Yeah. And they're not, first you're worried about them blowing smoke in your face.
Right. Yeah.
Now you're worried about them blowing some virus in your face. Right. So yeah, and they're on the front lines, and I absolutely understand why they would like that, and casinos need to do it for their protection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No question. Even though we know a lot of smokers love to gamble, but you know, you can still, you know, have a place for them to smoke outside. And you know, I've seen it on the East Coast where there's no smoking in the regular casino, and they've set up these outdoor areas where they have slot machines, and they make more money on those outdoor areas where they can smoke. You know?
And was smoking outlawed in AC casinos?
It is now, yeah, but just temporarily.
Okay, so again, another thing that they probably cried about, and now it might look back and say, hey, it worked to our benefit.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, and if everybody has to do it, nobody has an advantage.
True, equal playing field.
Yeah, absolutely. So how long do you think it's going to be before the plexiglass comes down?
I
hate to put you on the predictive area again as well.
I actually thought this whole thing was going to blow over in a couple of months.
Yeah.
I was shocked that it lasted through the summer and into the fall and into the winter. So I really don't know. And maybe there are some places that keep it up, or give players the option. I was in one casino recently, and they had every other table with plexiglass. And it's really player preference. If players are more comfortable, and if they're more comfortable, they play longer.
Right.
And we know what happens when they play longer.
Right.
Then I guess casinos will keep them up.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, and the poker tables now, it's a regular poker game except for the bucket glass.
It really is. And again, I'm just amazed by just how adaptable people are. And I was this casino I was in a couple of days ago, they had a poker room. There's plenty of action in there. It's just everyone's there. And they're on their own little kind of like a phone booth type of thing. It's like they're covered in plexiglass. But hey, they're still playing and... Yeah, I thought it would remove. I always thought what was special about tables and poker was the social element, player to player, and then players to dealer, that dynamic. But maybe I overestimated that. Maybe players don't really care that much to interact with other people.
Possibly. So where do you think the division of tables versus slots is going to go? You know, when I first started dealing in Atlantic City in the late 70s, you know, it was about 50-50, but, you know, more and more slot machines started to creep in, and at one point it was 75-25, then the tables started to come back. But now you've got online gaming. You can play all your slot machines at home. So when you go to a casino, you're going to want to have a real experience, you know, from now on.
Well, that's sort of been the hypothesis that I've clung to, is that players, you spend your whole life on these damn phones.
Right.
Everything you do is on the phone now.
Right.
That when you do get out, you want to, you know, you want to interact with people. Online is able to replicate better, in my opinion, the experience of playing a slot machine than a table game. Now, it's not the same. We've got some new cabinets. We've got that new Cascada cabinets over at Green Valley Ranch. This thing is just gorgeous. It's big. It's just right in your face. It's got this great signage. You can't get that on even though I've got a big phone. It's not that big.
Right.
It's not it's not 60 inches diagonally.
Right.
So, but of the two, I think that table games are best played live in a casino.
Right.
Slots, because just inherently it is a solitary activity. Mm-hmm. Table games, even with the plexiglass, there is interaction. And I just think that table games players, and you know, one day I'm going to be wrong about this, but up to now I've been right. Table games players, for the most part, want to play with live cards, live chips, a live dealer, in a live apparatus, or a wheel or dice or whatever.
Right.
But as far as the slots versus table games tug of war, I think like a lot of things, there's just an overreaction and then a correction. So when mid-2000s, we used to, this was back in the Shuffle Master days, and we had a vested interest in the outcome.
Of course, right.
People say, I don't have a dog in this fight. I got all my dogs in this fight. All the dogs were in there, and they were getting killed. Because we were out of the slot business by then, and then tables just took a beating. And I'll never forget, I think it was either when Bally bought us or Scientific Games bought us, one of their executives did a Casino of the Future.
Right.
Casino of the Future. Right. This like 3-hour presentation PowerPoint. At the end of the presentation, I said, excuse me, I didn't see any table games in that presentation. Right. He goes, well, we think that they're gonna go away. But again, typically it's good to be a contrarian sometimes, right, because it was an overreaction.
Sure.
And casinos have now come back, and what I've seen, Roger, and this can't be a coincidence because I see it at the bank too. And you can't walk into a bank now without five people saying hello to you.
Right.
And in table games, it was the one advantage they had. And the interaction, the making you feel special.
Right.
And I noticed it at the casinos I would walk into. They would, because the dealers would greet you, smile. Mm-hmm. Hey, back in the day, dealers were like, I got an hour and a half left. I'm not even going to make eye contact with this guy.
Yeah, sure.
I don't want him sitting down at my table.
I was.
You dealt back in AC, right?
Yeah, yeah.
On the craps?
No, I'm blackjack and baccarat.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, So yeah, I mean,
you must not have been going for your own then.
Yeah, I remember looking at the ceiling a lot. You know,
yeah,
don't sit down.
All of a sudden, you get astigmatism. Your eyes just look somewhere else. But I noticed that with casinos, and you go in there. Hey, sir, how are you? And play, and it was you get anywhere near a game, it was like going to like the midway at a carnival.
Right.
Step right up,
mm-hmm.
And the dealers were fun. They laugh, and you have a good time. And another trend, which probably will not blossom, but I've seen it at a few casinos now, dealers going for their own.
Yeah.
Now, okay. Now, did you ever go for your own?
No, never did. No. In New Jersey, you couldn't do that.
Oh, really?
No,
they wouldn't never.
You pulled the tips with everybody for the whole week, not just the shift. You know, it was crazy.
Well,
we had a guy from Hong Kong one time came in, a big high roller. He was betting 50,000, 100,000 a hand. He was there for a week. At the end of the week, he was up and down. He was even, you know. So it was, oh, great. We wasted a whole week, you know. But then he really liked the service he got. So he said, I want to tip every one of you dealers. You know, I want to give you a Rolex watch. And we're going, yeah, you know. But the state commission wouldn't allow them to do it. So he tipped, you know, a good amount. But it was, you know, we just got a few dimes, extra dimes in our paycheck. You know?
I'm seeing more and more casinos letting dealers go for their own. Now, again, we know there are drawbacks.
Right.
We know,
sure,
hey,
course,
the scheduler all of a sudden becomes your best friend.
Yes.
Because you want to be on that double-deck blackjack game and not over in the corner dealing the Wheel of Fortune.
Right.
So we know the drawbacks, but there is still nothing like that when the dealer has a vested interest in the outcome.
Right.
Can make you make the players happy, they're having a good time.
Sure.
Listen, 99% of people know they're going to lose.
Right.
I know I'm going to lose.
Right.
And I still play. Why? Because it's fun.
Right.
Yeah. And a great dealer makes it even more fun. And that's the advantage that tables have always had, always will have. And I'm certain, although I've never had anybody confirm this, I'm sure that these big casino companies 10 years ago made a concerted effort to improve their customer service. And maybe it was desperate. Table games were going the way of the dodo bird.
Sure, right, yeah.
So maybe they decided to do that because they had to. But whatever the reason, it absolutely worked.
Sure. Yeah, you mentioned Macau, you know, as a former dealer, when I went over to Macau for the first time, I walked into the Venetian and you saw the sea of table games. It was like I had died and got to heaven, you know. And there's a few little slots around the edges, you know, and I think it's still that way. But I know you have a love for table games too. So I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us today, and you know, good luck in the future, wherever that might land. And
have you heard something?
No,
scare me around it.
And we're excited to be able to talk to you, and want to continue to do that. And also thanks for writing the column every month in the magazine. It's one of our most popular features. People really, really are inspired by it often, which is something that's hard to do in a gaming magazine, but we appreciate that.
Well, they're fun. I really appreciate the opportunity. Good talking to you, Roger.
Hope you enjoyed this week's podcast brought to you by Vector Solutions, formerly Casino Essentials, the leading e-learning provider of AML compliance training for the gaming industry. For more information, visit CasinoEssentials.com. To learn more about table games and their relationship to slot machines and table revenue, visit GGBMagazine.com. To get all the news of the gaming industry, particularly of the coronavirus situation and its impact on gaming, including daily updates, subscribe for free at GGBNews.com by using the code GGB180. Don't miss a single episode of the podcast. Subscribe on iTunes and Spotify today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB Podcast.